really is a great honor and a privilege to be here. And to be able to wake up early in the morning in New Orleans is always a surprise. So we've got a really terrific session for you. So our job is to talk about new discoveries and future treatments. Now, you know, new is a complex word. And new could be something that you never heard of, something you never used, or something that the people that you work with never heard of or never used. And I know that all of you here have experienced each one of those things. So what we're going to try and do is Gigi and I are going to tag team around some things that are new in terms of practical, and then new in terms of really new. Big ideas. So I'm the small idea guy, and Gigi's the big idea guy, and we're going to try and go through that. But the big deal here is that, you know, we talk a lot about zebras, and we talk a lot about the importance of recognizing zebras. Well, that's very important. You got to make a diagnosis, right? The paradigm goes, diagnosed first, treat second. At least it should go that way. And it's complicated. And the first thing after the diagnosis, and you say, wow, that person has a zebra problem. Well, that's not the end of the conversation. That's the beginning. And then the question is, how do you ride that there zebra? And you notice that it's not simple. So this guy, you see the expression on his face, both the face of the zebra and of the rider, right? Neither one of them look all that happy, and neither one of them look all that comfortable. And I'm sure that much of this mimics some of your experience. So what I want to talk about in the next two and a half hours is how we handle some of that. And because a lot of that has to do with drug management, I'm going to talk a lot about drugs and how they work, not too difficult stuff for me, but stuff that is how they work and why you use them. First, of course, I have to remind you that I only am able to do these things because you pay my salary, and I'm really grateful for that. And every year on April 15th, if you did, then if you didn't, well, then, you know, you're getting a free ride. But if you did, then your tax dollars support the National Institutes of Health, and you should be able to see here in the middle, those large wings there are the patient care centers of the National Institutes of Health. And my laboratory is all the way over in the third basement on the left, where there's no worry about sun exposure or noise or, you know, human contact. And other people, like Harry Malik's lab, is all the way over on the fifth floor of the other side over here on the on your right side. So he gets sunlight and, you know, pleasant opportunities close to the coffee shop. Sergio Rosenzweig is all the way back in the middle of the old building. So we actually have the entire NIH bracketed by people who are interested in precisely the problems that we're talking about here. But you need to know about this because the NIH is the nation's research hospital, and it's your research hospital, and we are there to help with your problems. That is critical to our mission, and I think something that you should know about. Okay, so you know that among your many jobs is to know your disease, to know your drugs, to know your doses, and you have to know your complications. I know you know that. I know that you keep track of that. But I can't emphasize enough how important you are as your own caregiver. And you've got to take that sort of responsibility. And this was really driven home to me just 2 weeks ago, when I admitted a patient from overseas who was very, very sick and had a disease that is very dependent on actually knowing what drugs you've already taken. And so I came in and I sat down and I said, you know, your drugs are very important for me to figure out what to do next. So what are you taking? And this was not a child. This was a woman in her mid-20s. She said, I don't know. I said, how could you not know? I mean, really. She was very smart. So how could you not know what you were taking? She said, well, I asked my doctor, what's in that pill? And he said, no. I am the doctor. You are the patient. It's my job to decide the pill. it's your job to take it. And, you know, she didn't come from the United States. And I was, frankly, quite shocked at that, because I don't think that would be an appropriate response to any patient, and I hope none of you in this room have ever experienced that. But I said, well, wow, okay. Now, you ain't in Kansas no more, Dorothy. This is where we start different. And so here you talk with your doctor, and you work with your doctor to make these things happen. And so my goal in showing you this stuff today is to remind you of some of the medicines that you might have heard of or that you might hear of, and to give you a chance to think a little bit about those and then ask any questions later on that you might have about them. But this conversation really struck me. This was a very sincere person who was being told, it's not your job to think about your problem. Wrong, wrong, wrong. So, what's for breakfast? We're going to talk about antibiotics. We're going to talk about antifungals. We're going to talk about antivirals. And then, okay, then we're going to talk about something else. So, we start out talking about bacteria. Bacteria, you know, this is a picture of bacteria. And the red there in the middle are the bacteria. They're being ingested by the cells that are in blue, and they get inside. And when the cells don't have the right machinery to kill them, those bacteria over-replicate, and they can cause damage. They can cause lung damage, intestinal damage, blood damage. You know about this. Infection unifies virtually everybody who's involved in primary immune deficiencies. Now, I need to just remind you about antibiotics. And antibiotics are, we're going to use that term to only mean things that kill bacteria. And there are two major kinds of bacteria that most of the time we're talking about. And the ones in blue are Staphylococcus and Streptococcus. You've heard about those. Staph is a big problem for many people. And then the ones in red are called gram-negative bacteria. So those are Burkholderia and Pseudomonas and Klebsiella. Again, if you haven't heard about these things, hallelujah. If you had, this is what they were talking about. And I know how doctors are, being one. They come in, they spew off a whole list of things at you, and they try and put as many syllables together as possible. And then very carefully, it's, my pager, sorry. And they run out of the room. And I'm going to try and make sure that we talk a little bit about that. So these in blue are called gram-positive bacteria. In red are called gram-negative bacteria. And that's important because it helps you distinguish a little bit what drugs to use. So I'm going to talk a little bit about a few newer drugs on the market. And they're both new because they either are brand new, coming out, or because they've only really come into general use. I'm not endorsing any one of them. I'm telling you about them. So the first one you need to know about, because this is a class of drugs that has really changed the way that we're thinking about how we treat not only these infections but a few others, are called oxazolidinones. I had to take a course to be able to talk about these. And the first one that came out is called linezolid, or the trade name is Zyvox. And this drug is extraordinarily active in killing things like staph and strep. And so in the old days, somebody might have gotten vancomycin. In the new days, they might get put on this to go home and take it orally. It's very good against those resistant staphs that you've heard about called MRSA, which often wind you up in isolation in a hospital, or people swab your nose and say, what's going on there? There's some MRSA there. They're talking about a form of Staph aureus, a bacteria that is resistant to another antibiotic. So it's a little weird. We define that organism by its resistance to something, but such is life. And the nice thing about linezolid is it can be given IV or orally. Now, there are some problems with that. There are no free lunches except here at the IDF. And so you got an issue about this. So linezolid interacts with some antidepressants. So you need to be careful about that. You got to be able to, you got to make sure that your doctor knows, well, wait a minute, I'm taking Zoloft or I'm taking something else, because those can interact and make for some discomfort. It's not a fatal discomfort, but it's a very unpleasant discomfort. Not in everybody, but sometimes. And then if you have a problem that needs long-term use of linezolid, you have to watch out, because it can cause problems with nerves, so people can lose sensation in their toes or their fingers. Occasionally can cause vision problems, and those things are prevented by giving vitamin B6 or pyridoxine along with it. Make sure you ask your doctor about that. Not every doctor uses this often enough to know how valuable it is to give B6 along with it. But those are some of the problems I mentioned with linezolid. It's got these interactions. It can cause nerve damage, interacts a lot with the antidepressants. And so there's a new version of that drug out now called tedezolid. And its trade name is Sevextro, and I have no idea where they come up with these names. I mean, you know, that's really, this one really gets me. But this is just like linezolid, except it has less interaction with antidepressants, and it probably has less damage to nerves. I have to say probably because it hasn't been around long enough to be sure exactly what it's going to do. So we, you know, like most things, we've got to wait for several years of use to be sure about it. But this is out recently. It's expensive, like most new things, but it is a drug you'll see being used. Then there's another drug. So these are all things that are sort of replacing vancomycin, which was the drug that was used to treat MRSA for many years, called ceftaroline or Teflaro, that's also good for treating MRSA. It's only available intravenously, and it's a very easy drug to use twice a day. Its only big problem for most of us is that it has the same allergy profile as some other drugs like penicillins and these drugs called cephalosporins. But it's a drug that you'll see, I think, used more and more. Now, just one last thing to talk about in these drugs for gram-positive infections is this agent called or ritavancin, and there are several other variants on this vancin group. And what's important about these is they last a long time. So this drug can be given once a week or once every 2 weeks to treat MRSA. And it's an intravenous-only administration. And in case you're interested or you're worried, it even seems to treat anthrax. So, like, you're completely covered. It doesn't have much in the way of a bad side effect profile, but that may in part be because it hasn't been used enough to generate enough information to tell us exactly what its side effects would be. One of the things that worries all of us is that if there were an adverse event, you know, it lasts for 1 to 2 weeks. It doesn't disappear like most of these other drugs very quickly. Okay, so I've tried to cover with you a couple of the new drugs that are out there for treating gram-positive infections, because those infections are going to be common in virtually everybody who has recurrent infections. Now, there's one new drug, or one drug that's being used more. It's actually a very old drug called polymyxin E or colistin. And you've heard about these outbreaks of bad bacteria that occur occasionally run through hospitals. And they go by the name of things like Acinetobacter baumannii, or Pseudomonas aeruginosa, or Klebsiella carbapenemase, Klebsiella pneumoniae carbapenemase, or KPC. These are bad organisms for which we do not have good treatments. And when that happens, we use this drug called colistin, which was developed in the 1950s, and it stayed in the 1950s for a lot of good reasons. But now we need it again. It's only available intravenously, and its drawback is it can have very significant problems on kidney function, so people are very reluctant to use it until it is really necessary. But it's a drug you'll hear about, and you might hear people mention, so you need to know about it. Okay, that's, I think, where we're going to stop on antibiotics. It is, despite what you might have heard many years ago, there actually are a lot of antibiotics being developed, and there's a lot of movement in this area because we know that people get infections, and bacteria are how we experience those first. So there, a lot of them are coming. They're going to be more active against certain organisms. They're going to require a lot less dosing. That is, they're going to be given less frequently, once a day, once a week, some maybe once a month. We still have issues with these bad gram-negative bacteria. One of the funny side effects that, you know, you often find things you don't realize, linezolid and drugs like it turn out to be extraordinarily good for treating tuberculosis and infections like that. So that's not an issue for most of the people here, but it's an example of how you develop things for one purpose and it turns out to have activity for another. All right, so that's antibiotics. So I need now to move on because bacteria aren't the only problems that people get. And fungi are another big class of infections. And fungi are funny because spores float around in the air. We inhale a couple of hundred every day, no matter where you are. They float around in the air and then they land on things. And when they land in a nice, happy place like Bourbon Street, they begin to send up little feelers. And just like you see here, they're up there waiting for the breeze to take them off. Like, you know, Charlotte in that movie, The Little Spider and the Pig, you know. They're waiting for the wind to take them off to populate new places. And you see this in many different environments. But fungi are always sitting there, sort of waiting to be taken off to different places. So you got to be ready for them, no matter what happens. So I want to talk for a minute about antifungals. And these are the drugs that are used to treat yeasts and molds. Now, you got to remember here, this, we're not talking about baking, where, you know, yeast is the good stuff and mold is the bad stuff. There are yeasts that get into people, and almost always here we're going to be talking about Candida. And then there are molds, and almost always we're talking about Aspergillus. But there's some other variants on that. And antifungals, so many of you remember back to the days of amphotericin. And amphotericin B, it was a drug that was the only thing available to kill yeasts and molds. And it really wasn't very nice to patients either. So I don't know if there are any people in the room here who received amphotericin. We stopped using it for the most part about 15 years ago. But it was tough. It made people sick. It gave them fever. It had all sorts of complications. And so there have been changes. And we've come up with new drugs that are really better. And I want to just tell you a little bit about those. So there's a whole class of compounds I'm not going to talk about, but they go by the name echinocandins. And these are drugs that are really, really good for treating yeast infections. They're really good for Candida. So Candida in the bloodstream, Candida in the mouth, Candida in the esophagus, Candida in the vagina, Candida in the fingernails. These drugs are really, really good. And they come in several different names, that all of which do the same thing. So mycofungin or mycamine, anigilofungin or Iraxis, and caspofungin or Cancidus. And all those drugs are pretty much the same. They're pretty interchangeable from the infection management standpoint. They're only available intravenously. They're gangbusters for yeasts, and they're okay for some mold infections. Not quite as good for things like Aspergillus as some of these other things. But the big breakthrough, and I can only speak for the patients that I know a lot about, but drugs that we all now spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about, are these things called the oral azoles. And you know, these sets of drugs have been proliferating quite remarkably. So these drugs are both good for Candida and for molds. So let me just remind you that all these drugs now are available both intravenously and orally, and they have a slightly different range of activities. So the drugs that you might have heard here are itraconazole or Sporinox, voriconazole or Vfend, posaconazole or Noxifil, and the new one that's just been introduced is isavuconazole, also known as Cresemba. These are drugs that people would prescribe if you have a Candida infection or a mold infection. And they're really quite interesting and have a lot of activity that is very different than what we used to see before. The only thing that I need to remind you about in terms of being careful is that voriconazole, which is a terrific drug and really active against molds, can make people very susceptible to sunburn. And so if you're taking voriconazole, you want to be thinking hard about how you cover up when you go outside, especially if you live in a southern latitude or someplace with a lot of sun. I grew up in Buffalo, so we never had to worry about that. But these drugs are changing the way we manage infections, and they're going to completely change the way that people experience these things. Okay, so I'm just going to say a very brief word about viruses, because this has been the frontier that we've had the most trouble on. So drugs like acyclovir and valacyclovir and valganciclovir are drugs that many of you have taken. Many of us use acyclovir for oral herpes infections. And some of these other drugs have now made infections like CMV really within reach. But there are still lots of infections that are difficult to get at. And you see here several of the kinds of viruses. This is what this kind of drug class has to deal with. Viruses come in lots of different shapes, lots of different sizes. Some of them have RNA, some of them have DNA. It's really a complicated class, and it's hard to come up with one bunch of drugs that does it. We've been very lucky that fungi are pretty much the same. They have some unifying features that are all the same. Viruses, they're very different. So the one new drug that's going to be available very soon on the market that I'm sure many of you will hear about is called brincidofovir. And brincidofovir, you might have read about it, was tried in the treatment of Ebola, where it was not very effective, but it's very effective for infections like CMV or HSV, and it's a drug that can be taken orally or intravenously, and is going to be used, I think, more and more for people with some of these complicated viral infections. It's well tolerated orally, except for some GI effects, and it seems to be pretty effective. It's not yet made big availability, but I know that that is coming, and I think it's a drug you're going to be seeing more of. Okay, now I'm almost done. It's time to return to old school, because old school is still good school for a lot of good things. And, you know, there are a lot of things that old school might mean, this might be one example. But I got to take you back to the past for just a minute. So I want to talk for a minute about staphylococcal infection. So I started out talking about the really complicated, really expensive, really effective ways to treat it. But I got to remind you that there's another way that is what we talk about when people have trouble, and that is bleach baths. Now, of course, bleach baths are complicated. You have to do those at home. Frankly, the solution, the other alternative to that is public pool, because most public pools are highly chlorinated. And high chlorine makes bleach, and bleach controls staph. Bleach is your pal here. And so here's how you make a bleach bath in case anybody wants to go right upstairs and, you know, do it, or if you want to make this in your own home, bottle it, sell it, I don't care. It's half a cup of bleach in a tub of water, and you mix in one person with staph issues, you soak them 15 minutes, three times a week, and when they get out, then you just put on some moistener. It's honest to gosh that complicated. And it really does seem to work. It reduces the amount of staph and other bacteria on the skin, can really change people's experiences of life. It's a lot easier to do than many of the very fancy techniques. In case you're not sure how to do that, this is what it looks like. You have to supply your own duck. That doesn't come in the package, but somebody who's clever in marketing could certainly do that. And it really is that simple. Half a cup of Clorox in a tub of water. Now, the last thing, you know, I am a little reluctant to talk about these things at breakfast, but look, life is just, you know, complicated, and we're all here because we're unified by our concern for disease. So now I have to just mention briefly, and I'm not going to have any painful graphics, fecal microbiota transplant. Yes, we're talking about stool transfer. Now, this has literally, as we say, taken the country by storm. And, you know, people talk about what's in that, hitting that fan. Okay, this is it. So here's the deal. It turns out that a lot of what causes bad diarrhea, especially with things called C. difficile, so many of you here I know have heard of C. difficile. I bet many of you had had C. difficile. It's unpleasant. It's difficult. It's then associated with a lot of antibiotic therapy. And the new therapy that people are talking about, because it works, is stool transfer. Now, it turns out it's pretty easy. I'm not going to get real more graphic than this, except, you know, it takes stool and it takes transfer, and those things happen. And you can do it under a doctor's supervision, either from above or below. People are working hard now to put these things into capsules so that it could be done in the privacy of your own home without any sort of unpleasant after effects. But it really makes a difference. This is just as good as the antibiotics, and for people who have recurrent C. difficile infection, turns out to be better. Now, as is true for all things, you know, picking the right donor is important, and that's where your doctor comes in very handy. But stool transfer is going to turn out to be a very important manipulation. We don't know how it does in primary immune deficiencies yet, but we're going to find out. And I'm 100% sure that people in this room either will or have undergone this already. We don't know if there are any long-term consequences, although we do know about long-term consequences to many of the drugs we use. And we're working very hard to make it more acceptable. I mean, it's a tough thing to talk about. Most people don't jump up and say, yeah, me first. But it is going to be important, and it's going to be helpful. So I've tried to talk to you over the last little bit about some antibiotics, just so you hear the name and you know about them. Some antifungals, because that's changing. The new antiviral that's coming, because I think that's going to make a difference. And then these new treatments that I suspect will have more consequences for people than we think. But, you know, things change over time, and you want to be careful about understanding. Just because something is one way when you're 10 doesn't mean it's that way when you're 20 or when you're 30 or when you're 60. And there are lots of changes that happen with exposure to time and environment and even things that are affected by satisfaction. So with that, I'd like to say, you know, your zebra is your zebra, and how you ride it is up to you. And it's now time for this one to leave. Thank you very much.